My name's Marion. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in Glasgow. My dad got sober in 1967, and I was 10 months old. So AA has been part of my life, my whole life, and a lot of my happy family memories, childhood memories, were going to the rooms on a Saturday afternoon with my mum and dad, you know. And as I say, it was just always a positive thing. My brother's also in the fellowship, so although I never seen my dad drinking, I certainly seen the effects in my brother's drinking on my mum. What I would normally say to folk is that my dad did a pretty good job of recovering from his alcoholism, but my mother never really did. She had been so traumatised by his drinking and by the poverty that then created. She just had lifelong mental health difficulties. Although they did kind of come full circle, and things were pretty good between them at the end. But although my dad was in the AA, we had a fairly dysfunctional household. But I also say to people, although it was not perfect, it was a lot better than the cousins that I had who still had performing alcoholic parents, So yeah, there was always food on the table. I was well looked after. I was loved. But my mum had quite severe mental health difficulties in and out of hospital. And my dad worked 12-hour shifts. And then he would go to an AA meeting. He wasn't around an awful lot. But anyway, so I picked up my first drink at the age of 13, as most people in Scotland. That's the kind of rite of passage, almost, although it's legally 18, but and suddenly it was like I just felt like I'd arrived. It was suddenly I had all this confidence, and I thought I was suddenly funny, and I wasn't just this nervous wreck of a child. I had quite a fairly long honeymoon period with alcohol. I mean, obviously, you can go back and pinpoint incidents, that were problematic. But for a long time, I went out with my pals at the weekend, and I got drunk, and it was cool, and I enjoyed it. And there wasn't a lot of bother. However, I moved to Edinburgh and I started working in pubs. And by the way, see if I'm talking too quickly and people can't understand me, gonna just tell me because I forget that I'm talking to people from all over. I started working in pubs, and that's when the kind of midweek drink started, because if you're off on a Tuesday, it's all right to get drunk on a Tuesday then, obviously. And I passed all these invisible lines, like of when it was all right to drink in the house, and then when it was all right to drink in the house on my own. And by 23, that was the first, that was the first time I took an overdose and had my stomach pumped. And that was a result of excessive alcohol and mental health and no learning any good coping mechanisms when I was growing up. So, life went on, and my drinking was, anybody that knew me, I was a heavy drinker, but I wasn't, most people that knew me wouldn't have thought for a minute that I was alcoholic or, anything like that. But it just steadily got worse. I was really lucky. I got the chance to go to uni when I was 30, and I discovered in my first year at university that I was dyslexic, and that kind of explained a lot for me. But my drinking just, I don't know how I get through that degree. It's just amazing that I did, because my drinking just got worse and worse. And I was married. I got married by this point. I had started waking up in places where I shouldn't have been waking up. And I started mixing with people that normally I wouldn't have been mixing with. And things just got worse and worse and worse. And I was lying to everybody, including myself. And then I just, I just ran away because I knew the shit was about to hit the fan, and I knew that all of the lies were about to come crashing down around my ears, so I just ran away. And I was quite good at that when I look back, you know, the whole, things would be great for a while, and then if I mess up, I'd just do the geographical and I'd reinvent myself somewhere else, and things would be all right for a while. So, yeah, I found myself homeless in the south side of Glasgow, and I'd finished my degree by this point, and I was doing a postgraduate, but then I was offered a job with Glasgow City Council in the social work department, which was, you know, basically the job in my dreams at that point in my life. And Glasgow City Council also gave me a house on that day. So I went from being homeless and unemployed to working for social work and having a house. But even though I'd just been given the job in my dreams, my life continued to spiral. And I always say it was the last 2-3 years in my drinking that I did 80% of the damage. You know, I was drinking, by this point, I'm drinking at least a bottle of wine every night, sometimes two. I kept myself away from AA for a long time. I was completely and utterly adamant that I wasn't an alcoholic, that I had a mental health problem, and, you know, so people needed to feel sorry for me. But it was just becoming more and more crazy. My life was becoming crazy. That's the only way I can describe it. It was, I think, one instance for me that sums up how unmanageable my life was I was sitting at my desk in a social work office at 9 o'clock in the morning, picking the charcoal out of my teeth because they had been pumping my stomach 4 hours earlier. Getting my stomach pumped had become every cup, you know, the self-harming of taking tablets. And, you know, it was only recently that I kind of realised that a lot of the time, it wasn't that I was wanting to kill myself, although later on that was the case, but a lot of it was just that I felt like I was such a terrible person that I needed to be purged somehow, that I would take all these tablets and then they would pump my stomach and, you know, and somehow that would be like purging me of all this craziness and all this badness, but completely fucking nuts, you know. So I was taking money out of my credit card to pay my credit card. I owed, if you knew me, I owed you money. Overdrafts, because I was a student as well, and because my husband had quite a good job, you know, it was the 90s, people were throwing credit at you, so I had lots of debt. I then got pulled up at work for smelling alcohol, and I was so upset that night that I had to buy 2 bottles of wine on the way home from work, you know, having been pulled up for honking the alcohol. And I think, again, one of the reasons I got away with it for so long was because the majority of clients I worked for had a drink problem, and so they didn't smell the drink off me, or if they did, it wasn't a problem to them, you know. But anyway, it all kind of came to, I think as well, it's kind of important to say that there was sexual abuse in my childhood. It wasn't in my direct family, but a lot of that was very unresolved in me. And coming into my 30s, I had started to have a lot of flashbacks of things that I had completely forgotten about. So a lot of the drinking was, I think, you know, trying to control my emotions. I've also got endometriosis, which is a condition of the womb, but it also affects your hormone balances. So, like, you know, I was off my nut, and they were trying to give me antidepressants, and that was just no what I needed. But anyway, so it was a Tuesday night, and I went down to a friend's house with a bottle of wine, and the friend wasn't in, but her brother was, and he had a bottle of wine, so we drank the wine, and then I wasn't feeling very well, and I was upset, and I sat up at the window to get some air, And the part, you know, he went to the loo, and when he came back out the loo, at first he thought I had left. And then he was just like, no. And he looked out the window, and I had either fallen or jumped out of this two-story window. And the reason I say that is because I was in a blackout, and by that point in my life, I was having as many suicide attempts as I was having hot dinners. So, you know, I to this day don't know if I fell or jumped out of that window. I think I fell. I do think I fell. I don't think I would have done something like that when somebody else was there, you know. So anyway, I wake up in hospital and my spine's broken two places. I've got three broken ribs, a suspected head injury. My right heel is smashed to smithereens. And I'm paralyzed from the waist down, basically. So for the first time in my life, I couldn't get up and run away. For the first time in my life, I had to face what I had done. And for the first time in my life, I just had this very brief moment of clarity where I finally accepted and admitted that it was alcohol that was causing all this craziness in my life. And so, you know, I said to my brother, you know, I want to get sober. And I think as well, it's important to say to folk that, you know, I didn't get sober for myself. I know they tell you that you've got to do it for yourself. But for I had no self-worth. I just hated Marion. She was pathetic and I hated her. And I had no self-worth whatsoever. However, when my mum came arrived at the hospital, I'll never forget what she said. She just started crying and she says, "Look at my wean, she's all broke." And I just thought, I can't do this to her anymore. She'd went through it with my dad, my brother, and now I was tearing this world, this woman's serenity to bits. So that's really why I wanted to get sober. I wanted to get sober at that point, no, for me, to just stop the hurt that I was causing everybody else. My sister, I would have probably been dead long before. My sister had propped me up, paid debts off, you know, just everything. So because of the nature of the breaks in my spine, the doctors didn't want to do any kind of surgery. So I had to lie still for 6 weeks and staring at a white ceiling with two mirrors on either side of me. And it was a sobering experience, you know. But I have to say as well, I was completely psychotic while I was in the hospital. There was a period in the hospital where I was just completely psychotic. They had me on so much medication, and I was adamant that I just wanted to die. You know, the idea of living life in a wheelchair was I couldn't cope with it. And I was just like, no, I'd just rather die. However, you know, I'm in a secular group. I don't have anything to do with organized religion, but I do have a higher power, and I've always had a higher power. And she kind of changes over time. And that night I prayed, and this is the truth. This is what I said. I said, "If you give me my legs back, I'll be a really good socialist, and I'll promise that I'll try really hard not to drink again." And that was the closest I ever got to a prayer, you know. And shortly thereafter, my wee toe started to move on my left foot. And the doctors were like amazed. They were like, "According to your x-rays, this shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't be walking. You shouldn't be able to move, you know." So after about 3 months of grueling physio and a lot of pain every night at 10 o'clock, it was like an alarm clock. It would start with the horrendous pains going down my legs. I realized later, or it was explained to me later, that these pains were the feeling coming back into my legs, and my movement coming back. But it was a very, very dark time. But the wee bit of light and all of that was a guy called Alec, who was the health liaison officer for Glasgow South AA. And Alec was bringing up, I'm showing my age here, right? Because he was bringing up tapes. This was 2004 when I had the accident. So he was bringing up tapes, grapevines, and just talking to me. And once I was able to get it up into the wheelchair, he was then taking me to meetings that were kind of local to the hospital and stuff like that. And then, slowly but surely, I kind of, more of my bits started to move and started to work. And so really intense physio. I was on two sticks by the time I left the hospital, which was 6 months after my accident. Sorry, 4 months after my accident. I was on two sticks. I could barely walk the length of myself, right? But the real work of staying sober started when I came out the hospital, because it was fairly easy to not be drinking, given that I was on antipsychotic medicine and everything else that they were, all the painkillers and stuff like that. So they I left the hospital, and although I could barely walk, I was going to meetings. I was trying my best, I realized because I had lots of experience of AA. I had watched lots of people getting sober. My dad done a lot of work, a lot of 12-step work. I had more aunties and uncles than any other way in school. So I knew that I had to stay away from the first drink, and I had to go to meetings. And that's just what I'd done. And I always say to people as well that my relationship with Alcoholics Anonymous is as dysfunctional as my relationship with everything else and everyone else on this planet. I had periods where I completely fell out with AA and stopped coming. I didn't drink, but I was half my nut, But yeah, so I went back to work 6 months after my accident, which was also insanity. But I was so desperate not to lose my job. So I went back to work, and a year later I got a promotion as an addiction worker, which was my total dream job. And life was pretty good. I was going to meetings. It came up for my first year's anniversary, and I decided to take myself to a convention in Ireland, in Ballyshannon in Ireland, and I'd never been to Ireland before, so it was a big treat for me. So I went to this convention, and most people would bring back like a bit of jewellery or a bit of literature or something. I brought back a mad Irishman that I'd met who was from Ballyshannon. I was a year sober and he was 6 months sober. So you can imagine how that one ended. It was insanity. The whole relationship was insane. And yeah, so during this point as well, my health is deteriorating. When you break your spine, it's not just your spine, it affects everything, and I'm not going to go into any gory details over it, but I just continued to have health issue after health issue. I was in a lot of pain. I wasn't particularly being supported by my employer. And I was just really, really struggling. Life was just an absolute constant struggle for me. And I lost my job in 2008 due to lack of capability, which absolutely broke my heart. And I also, just before I had lost my job, sorry, I'm kind of jumping back and forwards here a wee bit, but that relationship that I was in with that chap, that came to an end shortly after my 40th birthday, when I had spent my 40th birthday having a miscarriage. And that was shite. that was because, you know, because of the endometriosis, I had never expected to fall pregnant. And then when I fell pregnant, I was, my whole world was just like, wow, this is different. And then I lost a baby. And it was, that was the death knell of a relationship, which was already dying, you know. So, so life goes on, and I'm having problems with painkillers by this point. I'm, you know, it was just horrendous. I was exhausted all of the time. I was trying to work. I was trying to work as an addiction worker whilst taking huge amounts of pain medication, which was all prescribed. I fell out with AA. I drifted away from AA. That's probably a better kind of way of saying it, really. And, you know, I didn't drink, but eventually my head brought me back to AA. And, you know, seeing the early days of no drinking, it was just a case. I had to change everything. I had to change people the people that I hung about with, just everything, you know. And even just like clearing my debt was a major accomplishment, you know. But my head was still, you know, I'd so much unresolved nonsense. And I, you know, this is where I have to put my hands up as well and say, like, I've never done steps. I've never done the program. And I do often say, I hope if there any, I think there's one newcomer here. Please, my story is how no to do it. You know, I made every single mistake. I made it as difficult for myself as possible by no doing the program, because I was arrogant, you know. I was, you know, I knew all this stuff. This stuff's been in my life my whole life. I've never had a sponsor. I've never done steps. But what I do have is I have my self-respect. I have my independence and my self-respect, and I have a completely manageable life. I have real friends in my life who care for me really deeply. I joined Tolerance Tuesday, I think about 3 years ago now. My big pal Dante had started at that time the only secular group in Scotland. He's since also started a meeting just up the road in East Kilbride, but they are the only two secular meetings in Scotland. So we've got, you know, as you can imagine, we've got a terrible reputation of being the no god group and all the rest of it, although most of the members actually do have a higher power. The group is going from strength to strength. But, you know, it's because it was a bit of an old boys club for a while, you know, when I first joined. But we have a very varied attendance and people who are actually in the group. You know, we've got people in the group that haven't managed 24 hours yet, and we've got people like Dante who's like about 150 years sober, you know. I'm 18 years alcohol free. The other thing about being sober is that I'm honest. I like to be able to put my head on the pillow at night, and I don't, you know, because when I was drinking, I had lied to so many people that I didn't know what the truth was anymore. You know, I'd actually started to believe my own bullshit. And life isn't like that today. You know, even just for the fact that my phone isn't ringing, and I'm too scared to pick it up And then when I did pick it up, it was my sister going, "Do you remember what you said last night? Do you remember what you done last night?" See, no, to hear the words for the last 18 years, that has made this journey worthwhile. You know, I know that I no longer hurt people, and I no longer hurt myself, because yeah, I dished out nastiness and, you know, unfaithfulness and all of these things when I was drinking. But drinking also made me very vulnerable to people taking advantage as well. So, you know, it kind of goes both ways. But yeah, so, you know, life isn't perfect. I'd love to get back to work, but my health just... But, you know, I'd really love to get back to work part-time. But what I've done, I would say, in the last few years is that I've realised that I get out of AA what I put into it. So the more I put into AA, the more I get out of it. And, you know, I think as well, for the sake of honesty as well, eh, it's like I use cannabis for pain medication. A lot of people, that really upsets a lot of people. But, you know, it's non-problematic for me, and it doesn't have all the horrible side effects that the opiate medication and all of the other alternatives. And my pain specialist, who's like the top guy in Britain, he has, you know, I have his blessing, and he says if he could prescribe it for me, he would. So, yeah, I just like to get that out. So yeah, you know, life isn't perfect, but it's all right, it's manageable. And I live a positive life. I'm a positive contribution to my family, who are still in, you know, the next generation are just surpassing us and unmanageability and problematic substance use, but at least it's no me. And you know, I do a lot of stuff in my community. I'm on my community council and just various bits, and I also do service and a so yeah, I mean, I, you know, I've made every mistake in the book. I'm still making some of them. But my life is manageable, and that's what I came to AA for. I didn't come to AA to become a spiritual giant, or, you know, a guru or anything like that. I just came to get so that I wouldn't drink and that my life would be manageable, and that's what I came to AA for, and that's what AA has given me. So I'm really, really grateful to AA, and I've realised that in the last few years, and that's why I want to do a wee bit more service. And every time I see a newcomer coming in, I just think, well, you know, there was people here for me when I came in, and so it's important, I think, that even as dinosaurs hang about, just, you know, so that we can be here for the new people. And that's the other thing as well about, you know, Zoom was an absolute godsend during the lockdown, but for me it's important that I do my AA in my community and in my family at times as well, but, you know, definitely in my community. And we do have a lot of newcomers. Some of them, the initial introduction was through Zoom, you know, and it was an absolute great tool. But yeah, I mean, I think JJ Cale sums it up better than I do, and it's a wee line from one of his songs called The Breeze, and it's, "I ain't hiding from nobody, and nobody's hiding from me." And that is all I ever wanted. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad I'm no drinking. Thanks.